Today we're going to take a journey with Christ as he walks through the countryside, because this gospel is, in a sense, it's a story of a human soul. All of us are in this gospel, like so many of them, like most of them. They really are about us. This is why they retain their timeless character. It's the Word of God. It's not just about these disciples at that time, but us at this time. I chose thee for our Eucharistic prayer today. It's the second Eucharistic prayer for special needs and occasions. We don't use it very often, but it's now newly translated and permanently in our missal. So I invite you to listen, because it speaks about the journey that Christ walks with us and opens our ears and as we open with the Eucharist. So Jesus is in Caesarea Philippi. This confuses a lot of people. There's two Caesareas in the gospel. One is Caesarea by the sea, which was an artificial harbor that Herod had put in. Israel has no natural harbor, so if you look at it, it's still underwater there, and the city's been excavated, what's left of it. But it was a wonder of the world. Concrete was known in that time and then lost to history until the modern era. And so they used stone and concrete to create this beautiful natural harbor. Jesus, however, is at Caesarea Philippi, which was near Nazareth. And this was, of course, a pagan city built by the Romans. That's why it's called Caesarea. And it was filled with all kinds of different pagan things. It's a place, a worldly place. And Jesus perhaps worked on projects there when he was working as a carpenter or a construction worker. So they're coming from the world. And the disciples are not in Jerusalem where everybody is holy and just like them. They're in a place, they've been evangelizing in a place that's filled with a mixture of people, both Jews and Gentiles, believers and unbelievers, just like we are in the world. Caesarea Philippi represents the world that we're in. You know, we ourselves are surrounded by people of all kinds. Just got back from L.A. last week. I just prayed, oh God, you know, I learned how to drive in L.A. I said, oh God, don't let me revert too much to that way of life, that way of driving. But it didn't work, you know. But I always think of life, I still think of life, one of the cultures there is the freeway culture, you know. And when you're on the road, you're with everyone. You know, you can see different styles of driving. Some are good and some are not. But the thing is that we're on the road with everyone. The atheist, the unbeliever, Jewish, Muslim, none of the above, Catholic, Protestant. We're all on the road together. And we all have to have the same world that we live in. And it's Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus himself worked in it, probably, and lived near it. And they're coming from it. And they're discussing on the way their day. This is a model of prayer. So we're coming out of our daily routine, our daily work, and we're talking to God, and the Lord asks us daily, how did it go? How did your day go? How is your life going in your walk with me? This is what prayer is all about, a conversation with a friend. Sometimes we don't say anything. The person's been married for many years. They don't have to say anything. And this is the way it is with God. But he's just talking with them, and they're very much at ease as they walk. And if you read the gospel carefully, many others are following, but the disciples are nearest to him. It's not just 12 guys walking along. You've got the women that were accompanying constantly and the 500 that he would send out. They're all journeying away between one place and another. And he looks at his closest disciples who've been with him since the wedding of Cana, and he says, tell me, who do people say that I am? You've been with me for a while. What are they saying about me? You know, when I'm not around, what are they calling me? And this is what people in the world do today. He's a good man. He's not God, but changed history. He's a fraud. He's nothing, and so on. You got every possible opinion. But this is not what we're about here. He turns to them with this haunting question. I never fail to be moved when this comes up every year. Who do you say that I am? Never mind what the world says about me. Never mind. Who do you say that I am? And that becomes a very personal walk. And we ourselves have this question asked to us very often on our road of life. Just to give a few little examples. Who do you say that I am? You're working in the Oktoberfest booth. Somebody comes up and orders a sandwich. This is Christ, you see. Don't think of it as a ministry. We think of it as a fundraiser. But really, we're representing St. Ed's there. And not everybody works in the booth, but it's an example. Who do you say that I am? How do you treat people that come up that aren't of our faith, for example? Or there's needs in the food banks. As you all know, that there's a big demand right now for food. And if I go to the grocery store, we're going to put something again in the bulletin about what are the 10 most wanted food items. I can throw a jar of peanut butter in when I go to the store. This is not hard for us to do. Who do you say that I am? I'm the person in need that you gave that jar of peanut butter to. You see, this is who do you say that I am? We say it by our choices, by our words, yes, but especially our deeds. That's what St. James is getting at. He says, if you say you have faith, but there's nothing, no deeds to back it up, do I really have faith? We said Jesus is Lord because we made the choice to come to church this morning. That was a way of acknowledging Jesus by our presence. And by hopefully, by staying until the very end of Mass, right? I have to work that in once in a while. We can get into bad habits. And I always point out, I once had to take care of somebody that was ill for almost 2 years. I had to leave early. And I'm sure some people judged me unfairly because they didn't know what my needs were. So we have to be careful with that. But what choices do I make? Do I talk with God on the road every day? I mean, the road of life. There's always room for a few words for God, and hopefully more than a few. I'm not talking with him, I'm leaving him. You know, Jesus is getting out ahead and I'm falling further and further behind. So this gospel is all about us. And Peter is the one that answers this question. If you read all three of the synoptic gospels, they all have a different perspective on this moment. This is a critical moment. And there will come a time for all of us when there is that last question, or the most deep question. I got it when I entered the seminary. Basically, the Lord said, who do you say that I am? Because you have to make a choice. Am I the one calling you or not? We all have those big moments, and the big moment is the moment of death. When we see Christ face to face, and he says, who did you say I was in your life? Who did you say that I was? And we won't say a word, because our life is going to speak for us. And so Christ asks this question, and Peter's the one that speaks up. You get this impression that they went from a joking, open, friendly discussion to a kind of a moment of, oh my gosh, nobody says a word. They're a little afraid. And Peter speaks up because he's filled with the Holy Spirit. He's destined to be the leader of the apostles, so the Spirit speaks through him, and he says, you're the Christ. In the other Gospels, the Son of the living God. That's really amazing at this stage. And Jesus accepts this and appoints him as the head of the apostles. But immediately, as if to show that that was the Spirit working and not Peter, Jesus then says, by the way, the road that we're on, you know, I'm headed to a cross. Are your own spiritual leaders are going to put me on a cross and kill me. It's as if he said to us Catholics, the Pope, the bishops, the priests, and the deacons are going to try me falsely and put me to death. And we're going, oh my gosh, how can that be? If you're the real Messiah, how can they all be wrong? But this is exactly what he was saying. And he said, you have to read the scriptures because this is what has to happen. And then they will understand. But first I have to die. And Peter, of course, Peter is not happy about this, and he says, God forbid this should happen to you, Master. So Christ then says, and this is a very interesting one, in that, using the Bible here, so I don't want to move from the podium, but, you know, you've got these 12 apostles here. He's having a bit of a private conversation, and he looks at the 12 apostles, looking at Peter, who just got this big promotion, just got exalted. He said, boy, did you get it right. He says, I better not look at anybody. Let me look right down the aisle here. Get behind me, Satan. He says it so everyone can hear. Talk about a public humiliation. You are not thinking as God does, but as human beings do. Oh my gosh. Now you can see why the other 11 kept their mouth shut when he asked the question here. How often, though, does he say that to you? God forbid, Lord, that I should go through this cross. I have so much to offer you. If only I would be well. If only my finances were in order. If only I had my to-do list finished. If only I didn't have these kids bugging me all the time, or my spouse that's driving me crazy, or if only I was a nun or a priest that I wanted to be. And it goes on and on and on. And Christ says, you are not thinking as God does, but as human beings do. The truth is, the cross I give you is your greatest gift. I don't like this teaching any more than you do. I'm preaching to myself. I'm being honest with you. I struggle with every cross God gives me, but you know, so often, this is where the growth occurs. Love is not not just the good times I shared with somebody, but the really tough ones. You find out who your friends are when you're in need or sick or can't give something in return. You know, Christ gives us a cross to show our love for him. This is, on the last day of our lives, he assures us the crosses that we received and accepted for him will be the greatest gifts that God gave us on earth. Most of us spend our time doing all we can to get away from them. And Christ just says to you, he says, you know, you're on the journey of life. If you find a cross that you can't get away from, this is something for your glory. It is something to unite me to you. It isn't easy, but it's part of life. If we reject it, we are not thinking as God does, but as human beings do. Look how the world says suffering is useless. Look at this state, which says at the end of life, if you're suffering, that's useless. Let's just put you to death with euthanasia. This is a very pagan idea. Suffering has value at all stages of life because Christ suffered. Without Christ, suffering is useless. With Christ, it has meaning. Every suffering, as miserable as it is. I know what I'm talking about. There's been a lot of suffering in my family as I'm going on right now. And I think it, you know, you say, God, save us from this horror. But look at Christ. Look at the suffering he went through. If his suffering has meaning, so does ours. So this is the discussion they're having on the road. They're horrified by this. The idea, this phrase, you must take up your cross, was a common phrase at his time. Jesus did not invent that phrase. It was a saying. But nobody wanted to actually be on one. Christ probably didn't want it either. But he did it because he was obedient. And he finally gives us this rule of life. He says, if you try to save your life, you're going to lose it. What you lose for my sake, you're going to keep forever. How often we've given ourselves away only to find that the return goes on and on and on and goes on forever. The things I hoard for myself, my gifts, my talents, my time, what I keep only for myself when God asks for something, I lose it. It's only rented stuff. It isn't ours. It will depart no more. What I give, I keep forever. So this gospel then, it begins with a pleasant conversation, leaving the world where they're about their business, in their case preaching, which was their job, going through the path of life, going through a prayer time, being put on the spot, as we are every day, who do you say that I am? Then being taught about the cross that Christ will receive, and that we must receive, all of us. Wherever we go, as the Imitation of Christ says, we're going to find the cross, whether we like it or not, whether we have health, whether we have all the money we want, whether we have our life in order, our to-do list checked off. I'd like to have that done just once in my life. But we're still going to find the cross. So it ends with a rather tough teaching, but once we know it, it becomes life-giving. What is my goal in life? I want to be rich. I want to be full of grace. What do I do? What God asks me to give away, I will receive 100-fold in return. The cross that I accept unites me to Jesus forever. These are very difficult things. We have to hear it over and over again. It's a daily choice. It's not a one-time offer. And we blow it all the time, but Christ is on the journey of life. So are we. We walk with him. And we ask God to walk with us in life as he did with the apostles in Mark's gospel and lead us slowly to the true understanding of life that every friend of Christ is called to have.